The Magic Book Club with Benson's for Beds.
Hello and welcome along to a very special festive edition of the Magic Book Club podcast. It's not just me wobbling on, it's also...
Yay! Oh, mate! I've waited all year for this. The Book Club podcast, the two of us together, makes me very happy. If you are suitably festive, then shall we begin?
Let us begin, Emma. I am ready.
All right, then. So, everybody, just sit back, relax, and we are going to take you through our top 10 picks for book gift giving this year. OK, so, you know, for those people in your life who love a book, this is our guide. And you never know, we might even spy a special guest or two.
OK, Emma B, are you ready to kick off this lovely Christmas gifting guide, this wonderful service we're offering people, telling them what to buy for Christmas for people?
I most certainly am. Ho, ho, ho.
I'm going to start with perhaps the hardest gift recipient of all, okay?
Yeah.
The office colleague.
Oh, dear. It's tricky, isn't it? You never know each other that well. I mean, you know, I know we do, but sometimes the office colleague, it can go either way, you know, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It can go either way. And we obviously haven't seen a lot of our colleagues this year, but I think a lot of people are doing things like Secret Santa remotely. So, you know, you still need to have a bit of a think about what to get for an office colleague. And I think this is going to be perfect for your friend in the office. Bosch, How to Live Vegan.
I love these two. And they started off doing Instagram posts ages ago, but they used to just post all these fantastic recipes on Instagram. And what you could do is you could see me sometimes walking around the supermarket, watching a Bosch IGTV little video post, grabbing the ingredients as you go, and you get home and put it all together. I mean, I'm not even a vegan. I'm not vegan. I'm curious. But they make something that for a meat eater like me has seemed terrifying. Really, really easy. And the things that you can do, it's incredible.
It's amazing. The leaps that have been made in the last couple of years with vegan. Well, it's vegetarian food initially a couple of years ago, but now it's vegan stuff. It's just so great that you can eat that stuff and know that it's completely plant-based. And even if you don't want to go full-on vegan or full-on vegetarian, to have that choice.
Yeah. What's great about these guys as well is it doesn't involve you going to special health food stores or, you know, stores where you have to buy ingredients from, you know, that you've never heard of before. It's not all tofu based. But I mean, I made the most incredible beetroot risotto from them the other day with some asparagus spears.
They love a bit of beetroot, don't they?
Oh, they do. It blew the socks off my husband. He was like, "That what? Really?"
Okay, good. So that's Bosch, How to Live Vegan. That's in at number 10. But this is no order of preference, is it, Emma? We're not doing like a countdown of our favourites. We're just doing 10 recommendations, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. No particular order, which is why it brings us to number 9. The incredible Caitlin Moran and More Than a Woman.
I love her.
I know
I
you
love
do.
Her. That's all I've got to offer up.
Have you ever been tweeted back by her?
She is. You know when... in The Crown, you know when Maggie Thatcher arrives in Series 4 of The Crown and she meets the Queen and she does this enormous curtsy, which is absurd. Yeah. It takes about 6 minutes for her to lower herself to almost to the floor, prostrate on the floor in front of the Queen. Caitlin Moran is my Twitter queen. If I meet Caitlin Moran, I will do exactly that curtsy and bow, whatever it is, because I worship the very ground she walks on. She's amazing on Twitter, but also she's such a great thinker. She's such a great thinker. I love her words. I love her thoughts.
She's I've not read this one, but I did read How to Be a Woman. And I remember sort of saying to my friends, you've got to get this. But I nearly fell out of bed laughing. That's when I tend to do most of my reading, in bed. And I was laughing so hard, I nearly fell out of bed. So if that's anything to go by, and of course, all the stuff that she's done for telly and her Twitter and her writing and everything, she's a complete genius. I say that about Twitter as well, because a friend of mine did tweet her once and she replied. And that's all we heard. All we heard about for the next month and a half. That was it. Nothing else interesting. Caitlin Moran tweeted me back.
I think that will go on my CV straight away. No, she's brilliant. And this this book, More Than a Woman, it catches up with sort of where she left off 10 years ago, which is when she did How to Be a Woman, which I just loved. I remember reading that when I just turned however old I was, 30, I think it was. And I loved it. Kind of. Yeah, you're welcome. It just sort of was the beginning of... The problem is you can't really talk about being woke without it being a criticism, but it was the beginning of an awakening for me in terms of feminism and in terms of equality and lots of things. And I know I'm sounding a bit too sort of pathetic and
for sure.
Right on. But she was a massive, massive part for me in that. I was doing a lot of comedy at the time, lots of sitcoms and stuff. And it was reading her book that I then took put those sort of feminist goggles on, which she had taught me to wear in a way. And I remember looking at loads of scripts I'd been in and suddenly seeing that every single woman in all of these sitcom scripts I'd been in was either one of three stereotypes every single time without fail. And it was just, this is why I get annoyed about woke being taken down as a phrase, because it was like waking up and going, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Yeah. So yeah, that's a sort of slightly serious side to a brilliant writer who is funny, but also through the humour brings in these amazing thoughts sort of by stealth, doesn't she?
She's a game changer for sure. Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Now, I don't know about you in the Price household over Christmas with your lovely family. Do you play games? Do you do puzzles over Christmas?
Yeah, we like to do a puzzle. We like to do a little bit of, we like a treasure hunt.
Oh, do you write little clues?
Yeah, we write little clues for the kids. And my littlest one is, he can read now. So we just, like, his clues are just one word. So it'll just say dog.
Polly!
Yeah, exactly. Then underneath the dog is a treat, which the dog has already eaten. So that's what we do. Yeah, what are the traditions in the B household, please?
So there's only one, and it comes from my husband's side of the family. We play the cereal packet game. So bear with me. It's all right. It's not shocking. It's a family show, I know. So, which involves an empty cereal packet, right, that gets slowly cut down to get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And you have to pick it up with your teeth, and you're not allowed to. So you have to bend down. You're not allowed to use your hands. You're not allowed to use your hands to steady yourself on the ground. You're not allowed to kneel. You have to bend down and pick it up with your teeth. And what? Like, year after year after year after year, my mother-in-law wins, and she's in her 70s. I say that, Tom, because at number 8, it's the Tower of London puzzle book by the brilliant Sinclair Mackay. I spoke to Sinclair earlier on in the year about his Scotland Yard puzzle book. Oh my goodness me, the man is a minefield. His brain is a kind of brain that I have nothing in common with whatsoever.
Well, I mean, of course he's got a big brain. He's called Sinclair. Anyone called Sinclair is going to have a massive brain. Do you know what I mean? Equally, anyone called Tom, tiny, tiny brain. But Sinclair, he's a bright guy. But tell us about that book then. You chatted to him earlier on in the year, and this was a book of puzzles that he published earlier on in the year, right?
Yeah, and it was a book of puzzles that were wrapped around actual unsolved cases from Scotland Yard. And in order to be able to research this book, they let Sinclair into the vaults of Scotland Yard cases. He spent weeks and weeks and weeks going through all these files, and it was absolutely amazing. So you can be sort of detective yourself. You can be your own Sherlock Holmes, and he takes you through these cases and also then sets you sort of tasks along the way as well to help you kind of put it all together. It's brilliant. It's really fun.
Oh, there's someone knocking at the door.
Hi, Tom and Emma. Very happy Christmas to you indeed. I'm Sinclair Mackay, and I'm the author of The Tower of London Puzzle Book. And I've got a Tower of London puzzle for you. Now, just the introduction to it is that the tower, obviously, across its 1,000 years, has had a lot of very famous prisoners, some rather brilliant prisoners too, Walter Raleigh, the Earl of Northumberland. And there was a prisoner called Thomas Wyatt, who was an ambassador, rumoured lover of Anne Boleyn, and also a rather brilliant poet. He wrote poetry which contained riddles, and the puzzle is this, a very short poem which is a riddle. See if you can solve it. A lady gave me a gift she had not, and I received her gift I took not. She gave it me willingly, and yet she would not.
Right.
And I received it, albeit I could not.
What?
If she gave it me, I forced not, and if she take it again, she cares not. Consider what this is, and tell not.
Oh, come on.
For I am fast sworn I may not. By Thomas Wyatt. So what then was this extraordinary gift that is neither given nor received?
So what's going to happen now is... I was going to say, is it Woolworths vouchers? That's the only one I had.
I think it might be, what about that Sussex pond pudding that dates back to medieval times, that Prue Leith made them all? That, it could be that, or plague. Pudding or plague, you know.
I would like to suggest an actual genuine take on it. Do you have a genuine take on it, Emma? Do you have an idea as to what it might be?
It feels like it might be something like a heart. my love or my heart, not an actual physical heart that you might braise, for example, with some liver or kidneys and onions for a few hours. Just like the you know, the concept, my love, my heart, myself. Give to myself. Mm. Oh, myself, that's it. That could be it.
It's got to be something abstract, hasn't it? Yes. I was wondering, is it the gift of life? So a lady gave me a gift, i.e. my mum.
Yes.
My mother gave me the gift of life, which she couldn't take away or something. I don't know.
See, you probably nailed it. We'll find out later.
Time now for number 7 in our wonderful list of gifts to buy for certain people in your life. So this is one for maybe the dad, the cousin, the eccentric uncle. It is the brilliant Bill Bailey and his Remarkable Guide. Bill Bailey is rapidly becoming a national treasure. Who knows where you are at on Strictly right now, but he's doing very well. At the time of recording this, he's doing very well, and we all love him. The book is called The Remarkable Guide to Happiness, and it's the feel-good book of the year. And he just does make you happy. He's got a fantastic turn of phrase. He is ever so funny. It's full of great facts, and it's one of those books, every page, you're going to laugh half a dozen times per page. That is my guarantee to you.
I think it's just fits so well, doesn't it? Because what Bill Bailey has brought to Strictly this time is this, like, he's so sort of self-assured and happy in his skin, and he's not, you know, he's just really enjoyed the journey. And, you know, all those lovely stories that he's told about, you know, how his mum danced, and she was a ballroom dancer, wasn't she? And it wraps you. It's watching him on Strictly has just wrapped you in that Ready Breck glow.
Yes.
And I think this book probably tries to do the same thing, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. He's an engine of glow. He really is. He's wonderful. And I cannot recommend this book enough. And, you know, if for no other reason than just the look on your uncle's face on Christmas Day when he opens this book, and it's because it's Bill Bailey's face. He's got a funny face, Emma. Bill Bailey's Remarkable Gift. There you are. That is at number 7 on our list.
Well, perfectly done. Perfectly done, Tom, because that takes us nicely and neatly into book number 6. Now, I'm going to be really honest about this, okay? I did not expect to like this book very much, okay? I didn't, and I don't know why. It was about, I think, largely because it's about people younger than me.
I mean, you're really limiting your options there, Emma, if you only like books.
All right, steady. It turns out I loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And this is Dolly Alderton and Her Brilliant Ghosts. If you have entered or dabbled in the world of online dating, you'll be much more, I guess, au fait with the term ghosting, which I'd never really heard of it, because thankfully I am so old that I've never had to go through the hell of online dating. But she takes us through this path of this young girl. It is absolutely perfect for the millennial romantic. And I think it was just, she's such a brilliant writer. It's so funny. There's some great characters. There's lots of laughs. But there's also, you know, really poignant bits about being lonely and growing up and how exhausting dating and dating apps and, you know, trying to meet people online is. And I kind of finished this having massive amounts of sympathy for the millennials that are doing this in my life, as opposed to just being bitter about them being at least 15, 20 years younger than me.
Yes. it's done amazingly well, hasn't it, this book?
Yeah.
It's been hugely successful. Hugely successful.
Well, of course, the thing is as well, is because she's had so many years as a sort of agony aunt, as a journalist, you know, these sort of stories of agony and pain and, you know, new love and all sorts of stuff have just been at her fingertips for so very long, you know. So she's got this wealth of real experience and this, you know, and this fantastic writing style as well. And it's put together perfectly.
Let's go now to number 5, and this number 5 is by a man who he's been sort of how can I put this, he's not been front and center for 4 years now, because someone else has been front and center for 4 years. But that someone else seems to be on his way. It's the new book from Barack Obama. It's called Promised Land. It's the first of his memoirs, so I think there's going to be quite a few of them. Barack Obama, when he comes across in interviews, he's such a warm person. He's a great communicator. So as you'd expect, the book reflects that. It's not written in it's not overly written, you know, it's not hard to read. This would go really well as an audiobook, because it just feels like you're having a chat with a lovely man who has done some incredible things. Now this is obviously taking politics out of it, because I don't want to be on, you know, pro Barack or anti Barack, but he just is a very compelling man, and he talks about almost the mundanity of the job of being president. You know, every day sneaking off for cigarettes.
Oh, yes, he does, doesn't he? Yeah, an unlikely smoker.
Yeah, going to play pool every evening. He talks about his routine. And every evening at 6 p.m, he'd go downstairs and play pool with one of his guys, like one of his junior staffers. So can you imagine being that junior staffer who had access to the president for like an hour every evening?
But I think this is what the Obamas, I mean, you know, becoming from Michelle that was out, Michelle Obama, which was out. I said that like she's my mate from Michelle, you know, she just, yeah. In 2018, you know, I think this is what they are so good at in terms of their communication skills. They make, they are able to just keep us knowing that they are human beings.
I love their relationship, and I love how they reflect it. It's so nicely done.
Who are we buying that one there for? Maybe my dad. Maybe a dad. Maybe maybe a Tom Price. Is that what you would like for Christmas? Are you trying to tell me that that's what you would like for Christmas? Are we doing that now?
I've got it and I've read it, but you can buy it for me again. Signed for this one would be nice, please, if you would.
Okay. One of my highlights this year, and it was very emotional and it was a very moving moment for me, was when I got to chat to Dr. Yusuf Salam and Ibi Zoboi. They got together. Ibi is a young adult fiction author already, and she had known Yusuf Salam, who was one of the Central Park Five, one of the now exonerated five. And what I didn't know, right, and when the five lads were convicted in the courtroom, he stood up in court as a 14, 15-year-old lad and recited part of this verse that he'd already constructed in his head about injustice. And it is literally... It's so incredible. It's so powerful. It's so life-affirming about the power of art to heal. And we got to speak to him. And Ibi is just fantastic. And she's, you know, she's a really established author. And she's really let, you know, Yusuf obviously take the shine for his writing, most of which this is. But I think if you have the Black Lives Matter movement and what's been going on in the States and around the world, if you have a young adult, a teenager, my teenager Edie could not put this down. She could not put this down. It's written in a style that lots of young kids will understand and will relate to, but it is shocking in as well as in equal measure beautiful and hopeful. I got to speak to them both, and I have to admit I had a little bit of a cry, Tom, afterwards, because, you know, when you just go, I cannot believe that this happened to such a young group of men, of boys at the time, that in my
14,
lifetime,
did you say
he was 14? Yeah. And he was one of the 14, 15, he was one of the oldest as well. It's an easy read in a lot of ways as well. And if you have got a sort of aware teenager, or, you know, this would be the perfect book. And it's one of those books that really opens gateways for kids and reading. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's one of those books that you go, yes, that's it. They're hooked, which is great.
Yes. It's another, also, books like this are such an important sort of layer of sediment on their emotional crust. You're just adding in these recipes. Every little book is another ingredient in this recipe of a person. And books like this are really important ones. I remember reading Sleepers years ago, similar story,
yes,
probably not as harrowing as that, but it was nonetheless very harrowing when I was about 16, 17, 18. And I got a very acute sense of justice and that sort of thing from that book. And if you can get your little people, and mind you, they're not the little when they're teenagers, but people like that in your life reading books like this, then that's all to the good, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh. Okay, was that you? Emma? Are you knocking then?
That's not me. It's not me knocking.
Oh, I know what the knocking is. It's Sinclair. Sinclair Mackay's back, isn't he? He's going to have the answer.
I can't say Sussex Pond Pudding. That's no, I can't. Oh my goodness me.
Or a heart, a pig's heart. Wasn't that what you said? Can't say that to Sinclair.
With some fried onions.
You had a very good idea, which was love. I'm going to go for Birth of a Child. I'm sickly clueless, as usual.
Hi, Tom and Emma. I wonder if you've had a chance to scratch your heads over the Thomas Wyatt Elizabethan riddle poem.
Yes.
That he composed a lot of poetry while he was held prisoner in the Tower of London. It was a font of extraordinary creativity in many senses. But the answer to his riddle poem is this: the gift that is neither given nor received that he was talking about was a kiss, which is probably not the most politically correct sentiment. But since it's Christmas, we can imagine it's a mistletoe kiss. Commiserations, but the consolation is that there would have been a number of Elizabethans and Jacobeans who have been scratching their heads for weeks over that, and the various other puzzles coming out of the Tower of London too. But with that, a very, very happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas to you.
The nights are drawing in, and we've got the perfect combination for nighttime reading for both old and young. So number three and number two, right, are The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse by Charlie Mackesy.
And then at number two, I've got Rupi Kaur and Homebody, poetry. I'm going to have a crack at talking about poetry.
good. But can you talk about it in rhyme?
That's what there was a young lady called Rupi.
Okay. The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. This book has been a word of mouth mega hit this year.
Yes.
It is, it's hard to talk about these books without trotting out cliches. It's heartwarming. It's beautiful. It looks gorgeous as well. And we forget, you know, that I think the phrase, don't judge a book by its cover, is one of the greatest disservices to literature ever said. Yes, judge a book by its cover. Judge a book by this beautiful picture of this little boy and his horse and the fox and the mole. And you will fall in love with the book just by the cover alone. And then the story inside is gorgeous. It's one of those books you're going to get given at Christmas. But also, I think for everyone, every time you get given it, you've probably given it yourself to six or seven people. It is magnificent.
Over lockdown and the bizarre year that we've had, his Twitter and his Instagram feed have just gone crazy as well, because he's taken little clips and snippets out of the book and posted them up with almost impeccable timing sometimes, with news stories about more lockdown or more restrictions. And it's just been this little ray of light. I've just had a look actually, Tom, and on his Twitter feed today, it says, it's a little extract from the book and his horse. He says, sometimes all you hear about is the hate, but there is more love in this world than you can possibly imagine.
Oh, it's so nice.
I know. It's, so nice. It's awesome. It's awesome. And he's the illustrator as well, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. They're gorgeous pictures. They're sort of, they're almost Quentin Blake-ish-esque in the way they're sort of sketched onto the page. They live so beautifully on the page. And they're fantastic. It's just one of those books, isn't it, that you know, you're as likely to give this to a 9-year-old as you are to a 75-year-old. It spans the generations.
All right, number two. At number two is Rupi Kaur and Homebody. This is a book of poetry. She is an incredible Indian-born Canadian poet who has just sort of taken the young poetry landscape by storm. And this is a collection. I think she's had a very traumatic past. It's very personal. It's brutal. It's incredibly written. It's delicate. It's sensitive. But what I love about it is, if poetry is something that you kind of go, oh, that's terrifying. Ah, I can't do poetry. She breaks things up into tiny bits, longer bits. It's so easy to read. It lingers with you. You can come back to it. You can put it down. It's not like Paradise Lost, where it's going to take you a lifetime to understand the first paragraph. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's literally, it's so digestible in little tiny chunks. But I mean, all power to her for being so open about her life and about her struggle with depression. And I think for anybody who has struggled in this time with restrictions, I know the anxiety levels are off the charts, and I've certainly had my darker days. You know, it's been a really tough year. This is a really interesting insight into her coping mechanisms and how she has managed it. She's a genius writer.
You know, I find it fascinating when we talk about novels and about books, about poetry and all these different things, how we reach out for so many different things. Sometimes we're reaching out for escapism. We want to fly away into a world of crime that isn't our own. And sometimes we want someone to drill down inside us. And that's what's happening there with this sort of poetry, that connection that takes us within our own selves and that we can empathize with and that we can recognize. It's all there, isn't it? It's all there. And that does sound brilliant.
And she's an illustrator as well, like Charlie Mackesy. So she's, and it's again sort of simple ink line drawings. But when I think it's really interesting when writers are illustrators as well, because they obviously understand what they're trying to convey with their illustrations yes. better than anybody else. So they just seem to, it's like a totally nailed every single time. There's no confusion about you know, trying to interpret it. It's just there because they've done it. She's a hugely talented person. And I think she's made it into the sort of top 100 influential women several times.
Well, I did English at university and I spent too much time trying to understand poetry. And I think that's the big mistake everyone makes with poetry. Do you know what I mean? Trying to understand. You need to understand it. You need to react to it. You need to feel it. You need to respond to it. You read it and it triggers things in your brain. You don't need to turn around and look at what those things are that are being triggered. You just need to feel those emotions. I think that's, you know, I think poetry is due a resurgence in that way, like a commercial resurgence.
Well, I think, yeah, and I think because of there's so many fantastic new poets, and going back to punching the air as well, you know, whether that's slam poetry, spoken word, which yes. is, you know, more of a kind of, it's found its way into all sorts of urban environments, which is amazing. You know, it's not just the sort of educated classes that are reading poetry, and words are being used in amazing, exciting forums and ways. And, you know, my daughter, who's 17, is not nearly as frightened of poetry as I was at her age, because, you know, they're talking to, you know, rappers and musicians who are talking in verse all the time. Yes. You know, so it's maybe that's the other thing about 2021.
From the magic of poetry then to the life-changing magic of sheds.
This is the last book that we're going to chat about before we reveal our book of the month. Dads, oh my goodness me, dads are so difficult to buy anything for. Just, you know, go just stay safe. It's a shed, a book about a shed is always going to be okay, right? It's always going yes. to be, it's always going to be appreciated. And this year I am contemplating buying this for my other half, actually, because this year we built two sheds with our own Burr Ands.
Wow. Is that a his and hers shed?
It is a bit, yeah.
Who's got the
bigger
one?
Don't come near me.
Should I ask?
Just you stay out of mine. Stay out of mine.
It's a very good idea. And what are you using the sheds for? Are they proper garden sheds? Because we know the lovely Jim Davis, one of the presenters at Magic, he has a shed that he broadcasts from. So sheds are not just for hammers and nails and you know, workbenches.
Now one of them is where he works. My other half, I'm even calling him he now. It's all he needs is a sofa bed in there, and we're done. We're happy.
Yeah,
he's moved out into there, and then mine is a gardening shed. So I have, it smells of old seeds, and it's got lots of you know, old toilet rolls in there, and bins of bulbs and stuff like that. And I can happily spend hours in there doing not a lot.
There's brilliant philosophy to sheds, you know. There is brilliant, because the shed, right, is that's the truth of what we really want. on display externally, we want bigger houses, we want bigger cars, we want more space, we want impressive land, we want all these big things. The reality is, what our real people want inside of us, the real humans inside of us, we just want a tiny little snug where we can have two or three of our most important things with us. That's all we really want. That's why sheds are brilliant.
I couldn't have said that. There's nothing else to say. That's it. That is it. That is it. And that is
a shed poem. That leads us very nicely then to our book of the month, and a book that's perfect for everyone and anyone you love. It is The QI Elves with Funny You Should Ask. And what is that? Do I hear the pitter-patter of tiny elf feet?
Yes, it is. It is. It is the pitter-patter of elf feet. Welcome to the Magic Radio Book Club podcast. It's Andrew Hunter-Murray.
How are you? How Christmassy are you on a scale of 0 to 1,000?
To 1,000? God. Well, it's pretty early, but I'd say I'm already on several hundred. I think everyone's getting there a bit earlier this year. I've had a stir-up Sunday, so there is a cake in production.
That's a true marker. That is one of the benchmarks of feeling festive, for certain. Now, Andrew, you're here to talk about your amazing book, Funny You Should Ask. It's our book of the month. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's called Funny You Should Ask. It came out of a show on Radio 2, which we do, which is called The Why Workshop. And every week, Zoe Ball gathers some questions from her listeners. And the questions are about pretty much everything under the sun, and we try and answer them. So they're things like, why is bacon the only meat that comes in rashers? What's on the other side of my belly button? Very terrifying conceptual question. So all these amazing questions, you know, why don't clouds freeze? How loud can something be? And we have to come up with an answer. And so we collated, you know, hundreds of these questions, thought of the questions we also wanted to know the answers to, and we've written all the answers up into a book, and there it is.
Is there a question, Andrew, which you still think about in your career as a question answerer, where you just think, oh, I never got that one right. I'm never going to get that one.
Well, sometimes there's no answer, and that's very frustrating, and we have to fess up to it. Also, fessing up on live radio is a nightmare. So,
yeah, tell me about it.
There's one about, in fact, we actually put this in the book. There's one about why dusters are always yellow, or mostly yellow, you know, so kind of that classic yellow duster. And there are about four theories, all equally plausible, all with good evidence behind them. And at some point, you just have to throw up your hands and say, we don't know.
Don't know, mate.
Yeah.
the thing is, right, about a question like, why is a duster yellow? You just don't even know that you need to know the answer to that until the question is posed. And then you're like, I really totally need to know the answer to that.
Exactly.
Immediately. Like, why is that?
That is the problem. Are you, Andrew, are you amazing at pub quizzes? Or are you one of these people, maybe like me, I know, like Emma, I know for a fact Emma's like this. All this information I have, and yet if you sit me down and ask me to access the information, hopeless. Cannot do it. Can't go through the Rolodex and grab it from my brain.
Exactly like that. So, I mean, I've been at QI for 12 years now, and I remember maybe the first fact I learned and maybe the most recent one, and that everything in between is just this wash of stuff. I'm able to tell people at parties, oh, I think that's not actually true. And then they say, well, what is the answer then? And then I can't remember and I have to go quiet.
Okay, good. That's good. It's quite comforting.
You just mentioned QI, Andrew. Of course, you are sort of, you know, lovingly known as a QI elf. How many of them are you, and how do you divvy up the questions? Are there specialists amongst you?
Yeah, there absolutely are. So the number of us is kind of one of those weird imaginary numbers. You know, it completely varies. Some of us work a few months a year. Others are, you know, all year round in the fact mines looking for stuff. So it really depends. At the moment, we're in the middle of researching a series, the next series. So we're kind of at full strength. This is when there are most of us around. And yeah, we have a brilliant history elf called Justin Pollard, who, you know, studies history. His whole life has been a study of history, and he, as well as doing QI, finds out, you know, all the background for historical movies or TV shows. We've got some brilliant physics and maths elves, and then we've got some generalists as well, who are always, you know, useful.
I love the idea of them being elves, because does that make Sandy Toksvig or Stephen Fry Santa? Is that how that works?
Yeah, I guess it does. It was from... Stephen invented it. I think he just kind of casually said it during one of the early recordings, sort of mentioned all the elves who are, you know, under the desk handing in facts. And then it kind of stuck. So we're now in this slightly twee, you know, living in the toadstool together or whatever it is.
Nice. It's a nice image. Do you have a personal favourite, Andrew? Do you have a go-to fact? Maybe you're struggling to sleep at night and you're lying there. Instead of counting sheep in your head, you go through your favourite facts like your children.
Oh, I mean, the thing is, it changes with the weather, because it's whatever we've been finding out about most recently, and they're often quite unprintable as well. But
that's a different edition that we'll definitely need.
Yeah, filthy QI book. Come on, that's next Christmas.
yeah, so it changes a lot. I mean, I did find out recently. I really like this, that flamingos when they have flamingo chicks when they breed, they feed the chicks food that they would have otherwise had. And the reason they're pink is because of the food. It's because of the color, yes, the chemicals in the food. So as the chicks become pink when they're eating this food, their parents are going gray. All the color is leaching out of the parent and into the chick. Isn't that crazy?
Is that why
I'm beige?
That explains it. Too many sausage rolls. That is amazing. That's like the kids who went sun-kissed orange a few years ago. That's what's going on.
It's exactly like that, yeah.
A lot of these facts sort of tilt towards animals, right? Because there's so many different quirks and things going on. Do you have a favourite animal fact that springs to mind? I mean, you've already, to be fair, we've done the flamingos, and I'm not sure. It's hard to top that.
That is hard to top.
Oh, it feels like I need more of a challenge. Is there a particular animal you would like to know a fact about?
Oh, now we're talking. Okay. Spaniels.
Spaniels, that's sperm whale. There's got to be a good whale fact.
Okay, yeah. I do know a fact about sperm whales, because I think Moby Dick in the novel, he's a sperm whale, isn't he?
He's a great white whale. Yeah. Yes, the sperm whale.
Go with that.
And I think that that story is based on a real whale, the story of Moby Dick. And the whale originally was called Mocker Dick.
A time...
I mean, what a timely is that music phone call. Kicking in there?
I am so sorry. There's a doorbell outside this office. That's...
And it's not the Mocker Dick alarm going off. It's
how
not
Christmassy the mock- is that? Okay, I can. It's stopped. I can only hope that is sort of permanently disabled. That was lovely to have a little punchline music.
Feralese, just a bit of Feralese there to help us along. That was beautiful.
Oh dear. So listen, this is what we're going to be celebrating Christmas with. Funny you should ask. Thank you very much. What are you going to be? How will your average QI elf be celebrating Christmas?
We won't be able to have our traditional elf Christmas lunch where we sit around.
Oh, but can we hear about that? I'd like to know about the traditional elf Christmas lunch. Come on, how does that
just
happen?
A lot of very pedantic corrections. We store up all the mistakes each other have made over the year and we get it all out of our systems at Christmas. Yeah,
that's so funny.
Elf fighting, elf wrestling exactly, yeah. Christmas Day.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining us on the Magic Book Club podcast. Funny You Should Ask is out in bookshops, all good bookshops for you to buy. I will be delving further into it, certainly over my roast turkey.
Absolutely brilliant, Andrew. I just love the fact that you're like a fact jukebox. You know what I mean? Just
style it up.
I can just pop a quid in you and you'll just give us a sperm whale fact. Boom.
Don't even need a quid.
That was absolutely lovely, wasn't it? Thank you so much to Andrew Hunter-Murray. And that is all we've got time for.
That is the end of the Magic Book Club Christmas Gift Guide episode. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed selecting some great book-shaped gifts for the loved ones in your life. But we're going to be back, aren't we, Emma, in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. Join us in a couple of weeks when we're going to be looking back at the best of 2020, which I cannot wait for because there have been some absolute gems. And you can plow on about meeting Ian Rankin and I can get all jealous over all over again.
Have I mentioned I met Ian Rankin? You did Dawn French. Did. Come on.
Oh, yes.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Happy Christmas shopping. Enjoy Magic 100% Christmas. Put those Christmas songs on right now. Have a lovely read and we'll see you soon.